From the KTO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The city and borough of Juneau has reached an agreement with a cruise industry group over the way it spends taxes collected from cruise ship passengers. For years, Cruise Lines International Association Alaska, also known as CLIA, and the city have disagreed over how the city can spend those fees. CLIA filed a lawsuit against the city back in 2016. Late last year, a federal judge ruled the city could continue collecting the passenger fees, but the money should be spent in a way that serves the cruise ships. City Manager Rory Watt says the agreement ends that debate and allows Juneau to continue using passenger fees the same way it has in the past, but now with more input from CLIA.
The services that we're going to continue to provide are bathrooms and visitor information and crossing guards and extra police foot patrol and the extra ambulance, all those things that seem like normal activities to us.
CLIA President John Binkley says his organization is pleased with the outcome.
It certainly achieves our goals of certainty for how the passenger fees are going to be spent in the future. And it also continues to support important services for the guests and also for the community as well.
The agreement also says the city will pay $1.5 million to CLIA for legal fees. According to Watt, the city will pay that with passenger fees. The city spent about $800,000 on its legal defense. Watt says about half of that has already been paid with those fees. Watt said the city has been in constant conversation with CLIA since the ruling. He and the city attorney have kept the Juneau Assembly up to date with developments. On Monday, the Assembly directed Watt to move forward with legislation to execute the agreement. The Assembly will vote to accept the terms next week. In the U.S. Senate today, a dozen Republicans voted with Democrats to block President Trump's declaration of an emergency to divert money to a border wall. As expected, Alaska senators split their votes, and President Trump has promised a veto. As Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, Alaska has millions of dollars of military construction projects at stake.
The yeas are 59, the nays are 41. The joint resolution is passed.
Lisa Murkowski voted to overturn the emergency. As she explained last week, she believes Congress should improve border security, but she sees the president's diversion of funds as an erosion of a power the Constitution gives to the legislative branch.
The power of the purse rests with the Congress.
Senator Dan Sullivan voted against rejecting Trump's declaration. Sullivan says the southern border is porous, and he doesn't want to vote against the president's attempt to keep Americans safe. Trump responded to the Senate's vote with a tweet, "Veto," in all caps, with an exclamation point. His veto would leave the emergency declaration in place, allowing Trump to take $3.6 billion from military construction projects and spend it on a border wall. No one can say yet which projects will be cut or deferred. At a hearing hours before the vote, senators pressed Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan for a list. Shanahan did say what projects would not be cut.
Military construction on the border will not come at the expense of our people, our readiness, or our modernization.
The Alaska projects at risk total hundreds of millions of dollars. Sullivan, though, takes it as a good sign that at the hearing, he got the acting defense secretary to agree Alaska is of great strategic importance. Sullivan spoke while speed walking through the Capitol basement.
So I asked him if those were critical readiness issues for the United States of America, Alaska missile defense, and Alaska F-35s. And he said, absolutely.
That may be short of a guarantee that Alaska projects are safe, but Sullivan says the answer gave him confidence. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaska Congressman Don Young asked the Army Surgeon General to investigate suicides at a military base in the state. The Daily News Miner reported Tuesday that Young wrote to Lieutenant General Nadja West requesting an inquiry into suicides at Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks. West is the Surgeon General and Commanding General of the Army Medical Command. Statistics were not immediately available about the number of suicides at the fort. A Republican representative had asked West to send a team to analyze issues, including the fort's mental health services and factors in the suicides. Young commends the Army for its recent focus on combating suicide, but says more needs to be done. The U.S. Forest Service quietly hit another milestone in its ongoing efforts to consider building new roads in the Tongass National Forest. Last month, it received comments on an important document from cooperating groups. The state has been providing feedback that could shape the outcome of the new rule, and so have Alaska Southeast tribes. But some of the tribal governments say the timeline has felt rushed for a decision that could have a major impact on rural Alaska. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Joel Jackson, the tribal president of the organized village of Cake, says it's impossible to separate the Tongass National Forest from the dinner table.
That's the way I was taught from my father. You know, he never liked the word subsistence either. He always just explained it to me. It's our way of life.
And Jackson feels like that way of life could be threatened if new roads are built in the national forest surrounding Cake. Historically, large-scale industrial logging in the region damaged deer habitat and salmon streams. And Jackson says the village can't afford to have its main food source jeopardized again.
We have no other choice but to stand up and say, no more logging, no more road building in our area.
This decades-long battle isn't centered on the roads themselves. It's about access, or as Senator Lisa Murkowski put it, making sure the Tongass is a working forest. Much of the remaining harvestable old-growth trees are in areas that are hard to get to. Last summer, Murkowski and a top federal official toured the last remaining large sawmill. And in August, the Forest Service announced it would revisit how, and if, the roadless rule should apply to Alaska. Jackson says he wanted Cake to be a part of that conversation. The plans include Southeast Alaska tribes as cooperating agencies, providing crucial input. But he says it hasn't always felt that way.
That remains to be seen.
In February, the Organized Village of Cake and the other cooperating agencies received a robust 500-page document detailing the various options on the table for the Tongass. From one extreme to the other, the roadless rule staying in place to the roadless rule going away for Alaska. And of course, everything else in between. In any case, Jackson says it was a lot to take in for the small tribal government, and the Forest Service gave them just 2 weeks to make comments.
We're not lawyers or anything, so, you know, we have to get help to understand a lot of, you know, what they're saying.
Jackson says he asked the Forest Service for more time, a few days, so the tribe could sort everything out and make meaningful suggestions.
They said they had a timeline and they were going to stick to it.
In an emailed statement, the Forest Service didn't directly address why it didn't grant the tribal government the extension. But it said there are other ways for cooperating agencies to participate. Raymond Paddock, the environmental coordinator at Central Council of the Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, says he thinks the Forest Service is trying to do its best with the directions it was given. However,
it was definitely a rush process.
Central Council is also a cooperating agency providing feedback on the roadless rule. But ultimately, the tribal government decided not to weigh in on this latest comment period because Paddock says they wanted to defer to the smaller tribes.
Where we feel that those are the most impact areas.
The Forest Service is shooting for a summer release for its draft environmental impact statement on the roadless rule. As for the organized village of Cake, they made the 2-week deadline and got their comments in. But tribal president Joel Jackson says it wasn't without a struggle.
Just takes a lot of time to go page by page.
Now, he's looking forward to getting back to another big project. Cake is in the process of restoring a cannery with the hopes of attracting more small cruise ships. Jackson thinks that's the future, and he wants those visitors to be able to appreciate the old-growth trees that are left. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Alaska House Finance Committee is planning to hold public meetings across Alaska on the state budget by the end of March. House Speaker Bryce Edgman says the meeting dates and locations will be announced soon. The informational sessions will include brief presentations on Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget proposal before receiving public testimony. Edgman is a Dillingham Independent. He says the format will allow more Alaskans to speak face-to-face with lawmakers.
We have a public that's deeply engaged, perhaps more so than in anyone's memory. And it's time, I think, to have the conversation about what Alaskans want in terms of essential services and how to pay for them.
House Minority Leader Lance Pruitt opposes the idea. He says the state has already paid a, quote, incredible amount of money, end quote, on the current system of having public testimony at legislative information offices. Edgman says there will still be traditional public testimony opportunities for Alaskans who live in communities where meetings aren't being held.